like I thought of actually in the middle of the night last night. So I will try to see if I can get them, but if not, as I say, go back and look at something else. We're kind of skipping out of line a little bit because mainly I think the book should have done it in a different order. And so we're going to start looking at arrays because arrays just are really important to a lot of stuff that we do. And so I'm skipping from here to arrays and then I'll come back and cover the stuff I skip over. And I'm going to start with the VB.net, and that has a lot of examples, arrays zipped. So that's what I'm looking at, is this part down here called arrays zipped. And the HTML and Word version are simply, this is the code, if you want to look at the code. The zipped has the actual programs in them. Okay. And now I always have the problem of which one am I going to. Department array is, I think, the first one. So the one that says department array. Okay, so I'm bringing that up first. And again, you get this conversion thing because it was done in .NET a few years ago. And you just close those off and it works fine. And again, in the code, it puts in that inherit statement that we talked about. Okay, so I'm setting up an array here. And I define the array up in the top, in the class part. Okay, so I've got a class, form, department, and in it I've got the inherits. And underneath that I have dim department array 3 as a string. Okay, so that means I can have 4 elements because I get the 0th element too. For a while, Visual Basic lets you choose between starting with 0 and 1. And so I always used to make my array one bigger than what was there in case I wanted to start with 0. So, now I am defining my array, and I'm defining it on the load because I want to define the array once and have it available to me on the load. So in the department load, I'm putting the information from the array. So here I've got department array. And notice I'm defining 3 things with the word department array. No language will let you do that unless you have some kind of an index on it that tells which one you're talking about. So what I've got is I've got the first thing is department array modified by 1, or by 0, sorry, by 0, is going to be books. And department array modified by 1 is going to be toys. And then I have gifts and cookware. So that's my array, and the index is telling me which one in the array it is. Okay, so if I use a data name twice, I basically have to clarify which one it is I want, and I'm clarifying it by putting an index there, which could also be a subscript, called a subscript. Okay, so that is set up for the load. Then I come down and I want to make sure that I've got a numeric. So I say, if is numeric, then I'm going to continue on. But if the text department, which is what the user is entering, is not numeric, then I'm going to drop down to the else and write out an error message that tells them it's non-numeric. Okay? As long as it's a number, then I'm going on and saying, okay, the array is only going to allow for something up to 3. So now let me check and make sure it's less than or equal to 3. So I'm checking to see if it's a number. I'm checking to see if it's less than or equal to 3. And I decided to check them separately because I wanted to give different messages. I could have put them in a compound, but then I only have one message. So I did them separately so I could put out different messages. If it wasn't a number, I get one message. If it's not a valid number, I get another message. So I said, okay, if it is a valid number, then I come down here and I go to the array and I take the department number and use it as my index. And just to be on the safe side, I converted it to an integer to make sure that it was a number. Because everything on the form is actually a string. Now, Visual Basic is pretty good about handling and saying, okay, you can treat this as a number sometimes. But it's always safest to make sure that it is known to be a number. So I did the C integer to make sure that it's known to be a number. And if it is not in the right range, then I am putting out a different message. So if I run this, okay, I said enter a department number, valid numbers are 0, 1, 2, or 3. So I'm going to enter a 2. And I am saying get department number with check, and it comes back and says gifts. Okay. Now, up above, I have a get department number, which does nothing as far as the checking. There are no if statements in it. It just says get department number. Okay. So now let's play around with, if I put in a 5 and I say get department number with check, it comes back and tells me invalid department number. And if I tell it a Z and say get department number with check. Oh, I think I pumped 2. I thought I put in a Z, but anyway. There's a Z. Get department number with checks. It comes back and says non-numeric department number. So it's catching those. We're in .NET arrays. The very first one is called whatever it's called. Department array. Okay, so now let's try the Z. If I click on the one that says just get department name and doesn't do any checking, and it crashes. Okay, so the Z crashes and tells me integer is not valid. Okay, converting from string Z to type integer is not valid. So it's going to yell at me for doing that. And if I stop and rerun, and I put the number 5 in, and say it crashes and says index outside the bounds of the array. Okay, so when I put the 5 in, that's what I got. So if I put in good data, that one works just fine. the problem is, if I don't put in good data, it crashes. So I really want to have those if tests to make sure I don't have a crash. Questions? So if I run that and I put in a 1 and say get department name, it comes back with toys just fine. So all of the checking is simply to handle if I put in an error. And arrays are very easy to explode if you go outside the range or don't give them a valid number to work with. They will explode and crash. Okay. Questions? Okay. Now I have my next problem. That's where I went. Open project or solution. And it has something to do with department is next. Department array 4 and department array implicit. So we might as well just do them in order and do a department array 4. And again, it's going through its upgrade thing. Let it do its thing. Okay. So this one says, okay, enter department name. So I will enter CI. Enter department name, BU. Enter the department name, EN. Enter department name, CL. Okay? So this one is taking in the names of the department. The other one established the array. This one is taking in the names to put in the array. And let me bring that down again. Okay, so I set up an array that is as big as what I want it to be, so department array 3. And then I said, okay, to load the stuff in the department, I'm doing the load, I'm going to set an integer as I as an integer. And then I'm going to say for I equals 0 to 3. Okay? And so I am then saying, put up an input box, enter the department name, and store it in the array modified by I. So the first one goes in with an index of 0, then an index of 1, then an index of 2, then an index of 3. And as we talked about last time, if you are got things that are constantly moving and changing, and department is not a good example of that, then you want to load the stuff and let somebody put it in. And we talked about the price of gold. Okay, so if I had an array of prices and my prices was changing a lot, then I might want to have this kind of thing where my user entered in all of the prices. Okay. And so from here on in, I'm doing the same thing. If numeric, as long as it's less than or equal to 3, I'm all set. But I loaded it. So now if I put in a number, let's put in 0, I'm getting CI. And if I put in 1, I'm going to get BU and so forth, because I entered the numbers from the names. Okay. Questions? That could have been done with another kind of loop, but in my mind, this kind of a loop is perfect for a 4. for a fourth statement because it's just, I want things to go 0, 1, 2, 3. And so it's just very easy. I don't have to worry about checking. I don't have to worry about changing. I can just say I want I to start at 0, go up through 3, and I don't even have to put in the step because the step is assumed to be 1 if I don't tell it otherwise. And so it just goes through, and it's a quick and easy way to write a simple loop. Questions? Oh, before I forget, I will not be in on Thursday. I couldn't get that up. I've got all the other appointments on something other than Tuesday and Thursday, but that one I couldn't change. But Joe will be here, so if you're having problems with anything, come spend quality time with Joe. Okay, and the next one that I'm going to open, closed solution, open, is also department array implicit. Okay, so on this one, I have set up a module. Okay, so I've defined a module, and I've called it mod array. And I've said this array is made up of books, toys, gifts, cookware. So it can figure out from that they are 0, 1, 2, and 3. And so it is setting up the array. And I did it in a module. Okay? So project add module is how I did that. Project add module lets me go in and add a module. And then I can just put code that I want in that module. And let me just paste that in. So now I'm going to go to the form, and there's the form, and I am using that array that I put in the module. Yeah?
What would be the benefit of putting it in a module rather than in the mainline code?
Well, mainly because you can then take the modules and store them in a library and go get them if it's something you want to use in a lot of programs. I mean, that's the main reason for a module is if I've got code that I want to duplicate, I can store it there. Okay? Duplicate in other programs and save from reinventing the wheel. One of the things I remember first doing with a module was we had to come up with a check digit, and that's a lot of math to do the check digit. Well, a lot of programs were going to check digits, so we put that in a module, and it could be brought into any program that needed it. Would I bother with the module for what I did there? Nah. Okay. So, in this one, I am doing the exact same thing, but instead of having it, it's off in a module. And the module is visible to it, it's public, it's usable, and it's there. Okay. And now I want to go in, and if I look back at my page, the next thing that I did is two-dimensional arrays. So that's what we will look at next. And then I may find some that I skipped, and we'll have to go look at those. So I've got airfare.
Which one is it?
Airfare. Okay, so on this one, I have set up a series of different arrays. I've got from the city is going to have up to 3. So if you look at it, from the city 3, and I come down here, and here's from the city 0, 1, 2, 3. So there's the from cities. Then I've got 2 cities 2, and so there's Istanbul, Baku, and London. Okay? And then I've got the price array, which is the 2-dimensional array, and that has got the prices going to these different places. So that is a 2-dimensional array. I don't know why, but I'm really thirsty today. So, when I set up a price array, what you're looking at is 2 dimensions. And so if I have, let's say, I can choose to see which number I want to go first, second, and third. If I notice here, let me pull it up a little bit. Okay, so I've got here 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 2. Notice that I am going 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 2. So that's got to be the 2 city, right? And 0, 1, 3, that one is the from city. Okay, so I can look at them. And if they were the same, then I would have to kind of take a guess as to which was which. But I know that one of them has only 3 choices and one of them has 4 choices. And it doesn't matter how you illustrate it. I can say that my 2 city is going to be down here as 0, 1, 2. And my from city is going to be up here as 0, 1, 2, 3. Okay? And it doesn't matter if I do them the other way around. It's going to get me the same thing. Okay? So that's going to get me what I want. So 0, 0 is 897. Okay, and we said that this was 2 city and this was from city. Okay, so from city 0 for 1 is going to be 987.98, and from city with 2 is going to be 299.99. And then I go to 2 city 1, so 10 is going to be 745.75, and then 923.45, and then 235.97. And so forth. Okay, and so that will just keep going like that. So from city 1, from city is the first number, and then 2 city, 2 city, 2 city. That goes like that, and you can keep filling in the numbers along there. I stopped when I got to 5 digits. Okay? So that's how it feeds in. So I set up the 2-dimensional table and I set up the 1-dimensional tables. So this has 3 different tables in it. Okay. So now I go back in and I look at the get price. Okay. And so if I say the from city code is a 1 and the to city code is a 2, only I need to put them in separate boxes, and then click get price, it says the price from New York to London is $235.97. Okay, so I put in 1 2, and 1 2 leads me to that one right there. 1 2 leads me to that, and it's 230 whatever it is, $5.97. So, and I'm putting out the price to fly from New York. So I went to this top array to get the price to fly from New York. And then I went to the next array to get the to such and such. Come on. Okay. So I put in the 1 and the 2. It came down here, and the 1 got me New York. The 2 got me London. And so I've got the price to fly from New York to London is $235.97. So it plucked those out of all three arrays. Okay. So I'm starting out with my if statement, and I'm saying if is numeric and less than 4. So in this case, I did decide to check for both of them in the same thing. That means I'm not going to get different messages. So if it is numeric and it's less than 7, then I take the text from and I made it my from pointer. I could have kept it where it is and used the C integer da 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 like I did on the last one, but I just decided I wanted to keep it simple, so I just said take that number and put it in from pointer. And then I checked and said, okay, as long as the next one is numeric and less than 3, take that number and put it in two-pointer. And then go to the price array, okay, go to the price array and extract the city. Extract the price. So I'm going and using the from and the to, and I extracted the price. And then I put out there the price to fly from, and I'm concatenating that with from city, and I'm going to from city using the from pointer. And the underscore was the way that we used to do it when we were moving down to the next line. We used to put that underscore in. Okay? And it still works just fine, as you can see. And so then I said underscore 2, and I put in that stuff, and then I said format currency. And so I got the message that tells me if I had an error on the isNumerics, I drop down and say from city is not valid, to city is valid, and all these different excuses, basically. So here I'm coming down and saying from city is valid because I did that first and that worked. And so I'm saying from city is valid and to city is not valid because I flunked that and came down to the else, and so that's what I'm getting there. Okay? If I got a yes to this, then I went in and checked to see if the to city was valid. Okay, because if I got a yes to the from city, I'm simply checking to see if the to city is valid. If I got a no to the from city, then I want to check and see if the to city is valid. Okay, and if the to city is valid, then I'm telling it the from city is not valid, but the to city is. Else, if I get a no to both of those, I'm telling it both from city and to city are invalid. Okay? So I'm telling it that those are not valid. What I didn't do is tell it whether it's a problem with the digit or the problem with I put in an alpha. I just told it that it was a problem. Questions? There's nothing magical about the two-dimensional array. I could have set it up with all of those zeros in the first one and made it completely flip from a city and to city, made them completely different. And that would have worked fine. As long as I keep track of it, it will work fine. Okay. So that's the beginnings of a two-dimensional array. I'm guessing that airfare implicit is the one I want to go to next. I actually was going to sit down yesterday and make out a list. Okay, on this one, I am just defining it a little differently. Instead of defining it as I did down here by defining each thing, I made something that actually looks closer to my graph that I drew. So the first one is the first three things, okay? So these first three things with the zero there are the first three that I put up there. And then the next three is the next line. The next three is the next line. Okay? So I put them up that way. Notice that I have double curly braces up here and double curly braces at the end. So I'm basically, that's the two dimensions. I'm saying that within this array, I've got four groups, and then inside each set of curly braces, I am then saying now I've got three groups. So within the outer curly braces, I've got four groups, 0, 1, 2, and 3. And then within the inner curly braces, I have three. So again, it's my 4 and 3. So looking down here, I can see price array, this is 0, 0. 987 is 0, 1, and this is 0, 2. And then I go down to the next line, and 745 is 1, 0. Okay, so I just set it up that way. And dim price array, in that case, has a comma in it. When I've got the two-dimensional, for some reason they put the comma in rather than have me set it up. And the rest of the code is all the same. Okay, now I gotta figure out what comes next. Pretty soon I ought to be getting to the fun ones. Introduction to arrays. went through department array 4, array 4 each. I don't think I looked at that one. Then we had and that one doesn't link. I was going to fix that last night. Those are two dimensionals. Okay. And then I've got sort using array. And redim. I think I'm going to actually, and I don't remember where this falls in place, but I think I'm going to get into the soups because they're kind of fun. Create soup file. Okay, so this is create a soup file, and actually I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to show you the code. Okay, so this was another write, and I'm not going to do it because I've got it all done and I don't want to wipe it out. I could change the name. But the write, this is just creating a file that I want to use. So this is create soup file. And I am doing a write line where I've got a work order number, a work item number, a work number order. Okay, so I come in and I open the mode for output. And I take in the data and I write the line. So I take in three things from the text boxes, put them out there, and then I do a write line and I write those three things out. Okay, so I'm writing out those three things. When I'm all done, I do a file close. Okay. On the load, I did a file open. And I was creating a file. So on the load, I did a file open. And then I did soup open mode for output, meaning I'm going to write. You can open it for input, output, or I/O, which allows maintenance. Both input and output.
Okay.
Yep.
So you take in the three pieces of text.
Yep.
What does that write line do? Does it?
It actually physically puts it out onto a file.
Okay, so it puts it to a file. That file open, comma one. That happens at load. So you've opened your file at load. Then you ask for input.
Yes.
Okay.
So when they click on write, I basically have them type the things in. When they click on write, it writes a line of that soup file.
Okay.
And I could have called it soup.txt. This time I called it just plain soup, so that's fine. It doesn't have to have an extension. And I open the mode in output, meaning I'm going to write on it. Okay, I can't read from it. I'm writing on it. And I'm going to create it. And then when I'm done, I do the file close. So again, this is kind of the quick and dirty, write a little file that I need to test my program. And lots of times I need that. I want to test my program and I want a file to test it with. Because I don't want to lose live data. I don't want to use live data. Nobody's going to let me touch live data until my program is working. And then clear just empties them out so I can put more in. And one of the others I had a clear one, and then I set the focus onto the first field. I didn't do that here. But you asked about focus before, and the focus would set it on, put the cursor into the field that it wants. Okay. So I've got a file out there that I've created called soup. And as I said, it was a pain in the neck to type all the data in, so I don't want to do a start on this and have to recreate it. Okay, so open a project. And now we'll go to soup again. A Okay, soup search is, I think, the one that I want to look at now. So if I run this program, and then we'll look at the code. What did I just do? So I read this, and I'm reading the first record that I wrote.
Okay, so I'm reading that first record, and the first record has an order number, an item number, and a number order. Those are the three things that I put out. And what I'm doing here is doing a search based on the item number to come up with the item name.
So I'm going in using the item number to come up with the item name. Okay, the other three things came from the file. So if I go back out, that's department array, sorry. I thought I was being so clever. Soup search. Then there is soup. Come on. Notepad. All right, I've got to close up before I can do that. So there's the file that I created. Okay, there's the file that I created in that create one. And the file has in it these three things. So if I go to run this, okay, and I click on read, it read the first record.
And the first record says 1111, 12, and 1. So it just read that first record. If I click on read again, it will read the next record.
And what it's doing is doing a search to get the next thing. So the next one is 12, 12, 27, 2, and item 27 is onion soup. So it's doing a search to find that out and then displaying it. So this is doing a search. But what is coming in is the order number, the item number, and the number ordered. Okay? So the order number, the item number, and the number ordered. Okay, so to do this, I set up an array. And this time, I wanted to use item numbers that weren't 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay? In the real world, everything isn't not very nicely numbered for you, 1, 2, 3, 4, the way we have been looking at now, up till now. So what we've got is the real item numbers are 3, 12, 15, 17, 24, 25, 27, 28, and 45. Those are my real item numbers. Where they came from, who knows. But the point is, they're not nicely 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay? So that is going to require a search. And then we've got an item name array that has a whole list of names. Seafood chowder, corn chowder, clam chowder, tomato soup, chicken soup, and all that. So we have that array. So what we're going to do is we're going to come in with the item number and search this array to find a match. So 27 is there, so I find a match at 27. And I find a match the thing that has 27 has an index of 6. So I can then take the index of 6, come down here, and get an onion soup. Okay? So the 27 comes in. I find the 27. It has an index of 6. I take the name with an index of 6. Okay. So that's how I do my search. Okay, does that make sense? So far, so good. So I've got two arrays set up there with a maximum of 8. Actually, okay, I've got 0 through 8, so there's 9 items. And I don't think I use 0 at all. Nope, there's 3, so I do. Okay, so now I want to look at the code. Sorry, I forgot to take a picture of that. Okay, so my search is down here, and I start out in my search by saying, okay, dim item sub is 0 and dim match indicator as no. So I've got something called item sub and I've got something called match indicator. Okay. And what I do is, I should have mentioned this, this is a function. This is a function called search array. And we're going to go back and look much more at functions. But all a function is a subroutine that returns one thing. So in this case, I am going to say up here, go do this subroutine. And it's going to go and do that subroutine. Okay? So search array, that means go do this subroutine, or in this case it's a function. Subroutines and functions are very similar. So it's going to go do a function. And I am sending it the work item number that somebody entered on the form. So I'm sending that down. Okay? It is going to do the function. And then when it's done the function, it is going to hit that return command. And depending on whether the match indicator is yes, it's going to return a name, or it's going to return match not found. In other words, if it's an invalid item number, it's going to return match not found. So my valid item numbers, I don't think I had a 40. So if I had a 40, somebody ordered a 40, it's going to come back and say match not found. Okay. So I'm entering item sub. When I go to the function, I've taken in the information, put it in the text box, and now I'm doing the search based on the item number that the user entered in. Okay? So, I am now going to do a search. When the user entered in, it's on a file. I should have said that. The user entered them, it's on a file. So, I now am doing the search array. So, I send down the item number. And one of them was 27, so we'll take a look at the 27 one. So I send down the 27. Item sub is 0, and match indicator is no. Okay? So what I'm looking for is, I'm saying, do until, and here's my until. Do until one of those things. Until item sub is greater than 8, because the array only has 8 things in it. So once item sub is greater than 8, it's done, right? So item sub is greater than 8, or, okay, match indicator equals yes. So do it until I either am out, I've checked everything, it can't be there, or the match indicator has been set to yes, which means I found it. Okay. So, I've got 2 things to get me out. Do until item sub is greater than 8, or match indicator equals yes. So then I come down, and I'm checking. And I'm saying, if the item number that came in, 27, is equal to the item number in the array. Okay, now the array starts out with 0. I think actually it would be nice to go get that. For some reason, this cursor, maybe it's the sun, but I'm having trouble with my cursor. Yeah. Okay, so I'm coming in with 27. And the index is 0. There it is. So I'm going to start by saying, okay, if work item number is 27 is equal to item number array modified by item sum. Item sum is a 0, so I'm asking is 27 equal to 3? The answer is no. Okay, so I add 1 to item sum. So item sum has now become a 1. So I loop back, and item sub is not greater than 8. Mass indicator is not a yes. So I go in and ask, is item work item number, which is 27, equal to the 1, 12, the one that 1 is pointing. Is it equal to 12? No, it's not. So I add 1, and it's now at a 2. And I loop back. Is item sub greater than 8? No. Is match indicator equal? Yes. No. So I check and say, is 27 equal to 15? Because 15 is the one that it's pointing to. If I've got a 2 there as my index. The answer is no. So I add 1 to it, and it's now 3. And I go through that again. And I'm going to be checking, is 27 equal to 17? No. So I'm adding 1. Go through it again. Is 27 equal to 24? No. So I'm adding 1. Go through it again. Is 27 equal to 25? No. So I add 1, and we're now at 6. So I go in, is item sub greater than 8? No. Is match indicator equal to yes? No. So I'm now checking if work item number, which is 27, is equal to the array modified by 6, and it is. 27 is equal to 27. So I found a match, so I change match indicator to yes. Okay, I change match indicator to yes. I loop back. Is item sub greater than 8? No. Is match indicator equals yes? Yes, it is. So I drop out of the loop. Now, I had 2 reasons that I could drop out. I got to find out which reason it was. So I'm asking if match indicator equals yes. The alternative would have been to ask if it's greater than 8, if the sub is greater than 8. I can ask either way, but I have to know which is which.
So if match indicator equals yes, that means I found a match. So I return the item name that item sub is pointing to. And item sub is a 6, so it is pointing to onion soup because it's a 6. So it's pointing to onion soup, so I return onion soup. Okay? So at this point, onion soup gets returned. Okay? And here's where I sent it to the search function. And this is the key thing about a function. You put the place where you want the return to go on the left. And then you say, go to the function. And whatever is returned, assign it to that spot on the left. So what got returned was onion soup. I then assign it to text item name dot text, and it gets put in there, and I see it on the form as onion soup. So a function goes out, it returns one and only one thing. Okay, it returns one and only one thing. And when it returns it, it goes into the field name that I declared. So I've got field name equal to, go to the array, send it the item number, which was 27. It returns onion soup, put onion soup in the text item name dot text. And so onion soup will show up there. So there's onion soup.
Another question.
Yep.
Could you show match not found?
Yes. We'll keep going for a minute, and it will rear its ugly head sooner or later. Okay, so now we're at, that's the array. Where is my file? There's my file. So there's my file. So if I click read again, it is coming up with 1224, which is a 45, and 45 is 8. And 8 is wonton soup, so it's showing up wonton soup. Okay, and then I do another read, and it's 28, and 28 is 7, which is green pea soup. So that's fine. And then I read again, and it's 17, and 17 is tomato soup. Okay, and then I read again, and it's green pea soup. Sooner or later, seafood chowder. I think there really is one that doesn't work. Match not found. Okay, there's match not found. So 34 was in there as match not found. And so I kept adding to sub because I didn't find a match. And sooner or later, I added one more to sub, and it became 9. So as soon as item sub was 9, when I added down here, I went back, it's now 9, so it goes out of the loop. If match indicator goes yes, it isn't because I didn't find a match, so I say else, return, match not found.
So whatever you return, you don't have to tell it. It'll go into text item.
That's right, because I said text item name dot text is equal to whatever is returned from search array when I send it the work item number.
Okay.
So when I send it the work item number to search array, it goes through and returns it.
Okay.
And then it keeps going a little bit longer. Clam chowder, match not found again, chicken soup, and then we've got endophile reached. So at some point, it hits the endophile reach. Okay?
And that's up here when I'm reading. If it's not endophile, take the else and put up the show endophile reached. And I made the button read not visible so they couldn't press it again. So once I click, it has now given me endophile reached. And watch, read button is still okay. But as soon as I click okay, read button goes away. Okay, I made it visible not. So I just made it go away. So they can't read again because I'm done. Okay. So button read visibility equals false means it's not visible and it's gone away. Questions? There's a lot in this program, so don't hesitate to ask questions. This is the standard logic for a search. I'm doing a search until I go out of the range or I find what I'm looking for. Yeah.
Do you get the function by clicking on project and choosing function? How do you get function?
It's part of button, but I just, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes, you can just write in there function and just start coding.
Okay, so you just type it in yourself. You don't get it from some other.
You may be able to. I type it in myself.
Let's see. Project. No, I don't see an add function there. I just type it in myself. Okay. And we will get into what by val and by reference mean later on. But for now, it just doesn't actually matter in this one. There are two ways of doing it, by val and by reference. And we'll get into those, but you kind of need to know a little more before you do. So things have been working with by val. Okay, so in this, when I click the button read, it says if it's not in the file, then take the three things that were keyed in, put them in the text boxes, and then take one of the things that was keyed in, which is the item number, and go do the search. And then the search comes back with either the name of the soup or the match not found, which gets put in there, and I'm all set. Okay. If when I tried to read, there wasn't anything to read, it takes the else and shows the end of file reached and then takes away the read command so that they can't read anymore. Okay. Now, one of the things that I want you to look at is the difference between these two loops. Okay. The difference that I want you to look at is the do statement. Okay, the rest of it is the same. It's the do statement. So I said on one of them, one up at the top, I said do until item sub is greater than 8 or match indicator equals yes. And on the other one, I said, do while indicator is less than 9 and match equals no. Okay? So do until is showing me what gets me out. These are the things that get me out. Those are the things that get me out of the loop. Item sub is greater than 8, or match indicator is equal to yes. If either of those happens, I'm out of the loop. Okay? Down here, what is this one? What is this one? Do while item sub is less than 9 and match indicator equals no.
Keep you.
Those are the things that keep you in. So these are the things that keep me in. So do while the item sub is less than 8, which means it's something up through, I mean less than 9, which means it's something up through 8. And match indicator equals no. So those are the things that keep me in the loop. Do while has things that keep me in the loop. Do until have things that get me out of the loop. Okay. Does that make sense?
You have an or and an and in there. Does the or always go with inside a do until loop?
I guess it depends on what you're saying, but in this situation, yes, this kind of thing. I guess I'm always hesitant to say always.
Okay.
But do until one of those is true. Either one can get me out. But in this one, the common thing is I'm going to stay in as long as I've got a subscript that is still looking and I haven't found a match. So that's why the and is there, because I need both of those things will keep me in. Okay? I'm doing while this and that are true. When one of them is not true, I will get out. So if it becomes yes, I will get out. And if the subscript becomes 9, I will get out. So the top one is either thing then can do me out. Okay, either can get me out. So that's why I have an or. And down in here, either one can still get me out, but both have to be true to stay in, because either one can again get me out. So both true to stay in. And if either one is not true, okay, so if item sub has now still is less than 8 and the match indicator is yes, I'm going to get out. If item sub is no longer less than 9, the match indicator is still a no, it's going to get me out. So that's basically the introduction to a function, and to be very honest, it's the main thing you have to know about functions. Functions are just something you can call, you set up, you go and you execute them, and they're fine. And I just commented out the second function because I didn't want them obviously in place with both functions. Questions? You look like you're feeling lousy.
Yeah, I don't feel that great. It's the heat, and I'm just looking at that window.
Feel free to open it.
All of, huh?
Feel free to open
well,
it.
Well, it's...
Too late.
Right.
Yeah, no, it is warm. What is it outside?
Nice. It's like 50.
It's in the 50s.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I guess, made to 60.
Oh, I don't know.
I only saw it go to 59, but somebody told me it had gone to 60s. Okay. search parallel, I think, is one that we can look at fairly quickly, but we'll see. So this is basically the same thing as the other one, which is why I said we can look at it pretty quickly. This is a simplified version of the soup one. So if you have problems, this would be the one that will help. So if I put in a... Come on, cursor... This cursor is difficult today. If I put in a 1 and say search department, it comes back with no match found. Okay? Because this is not the 1, 2, 3 kind. If I put in a 26 and have search department, it comes back with toys. So this is, again, the situation that we ran into with the soup, that the numbers are 15, 26, 37, and 56. Okay, and so they're going in, and this one has the and. So I'm saying do while indicator found equals no, and department array, it works up as less than department array length. Okay, so that's telling me department array length, because in this one I'm not reading a file, so I don't have a way to get out. So I am suggesting that I get out when I no longer have anything to do. And so I'm saying, and WIC sub is less than department array length. Okay? So I'm going to continue doing it while it's a no, and the array, the sub for the array, is less than the length of the array. Okay? So instead of putting a hard-coded number in there, I'm just putting in department array dot length. And I think that really is about it. I thought that had something else in it, but I don't see anything but that. The next one that I want to look at is going to take time. So I think we're going to call it quits and come back on Tuesday. Joe will be here Thursday. I won't be. I hope this is the last one, because I've got, as I said, one on Friday and a Friday and one on the vacation. So I think that will do it. But surprises can happen. Okay, so I won't be here Thursday, but Joe will. So try to use it as time to get caught up. Unfortunately, I can't.